Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Oh, look, you're going to love it on Detours. When we start Detours, the coughing starts because Melbourne's such a beautiful town. We've got dust everywhere. But you are. You're on Detours. I'm Greg and this is Lynn.
This is me, Lindsay. How are you, Greg?
Welcome, Lynn. It's a fabulous day.
Oh, isn't it beautiful? You know, and I'm so miffed because I'm not driving at the moment and this is probably the last good day and my bodyboard's in storage somewhere and I just want to get down to the coast and catch a few big ones. And I don't think I should have said that.
Your bodyboard. Your bodyboard.
Yeah, I'm a bodyboarder. Yeah, I'm an old surfy mole, so to speak.
Well, look, now we can, in Australia, we can be light. Things are pretty good here. Things are fantastic. But we do, our hearts go out to people that are lucky enough to be listening in Japan at the moment, especially the people on the northeast coast above Tokyo at Miyagi, which has been literally wiped out. You probably won't be listening unless you're in an inland area. But we've got Japanese friends that do listen to Detours regularly, and our heart from Australia, from Joy 94.9, goes out to you. And if there's anything that can be done from this end of the world, you only have to call your friends here in Australia and we'll help out, won't we?
Oh, absolutely, Greg. And it was amazing yesterday. I have to confess, I sometimes do watch the Channel 10 news at 5 o'clock, you know, the first at five. And the report came through and the first images of that wave just wiping out. And you had no idea, like, it looked, just looked like tin sheds. But the horror is, and with media today that it is, it's there while it's happening and it's, you know, it's live to air, is that there's actually people in there. You know, it was just so distressing
there
to see.
There are people.
And the images today, so, you know, the feeling of helplessness yet again with our global neighbours is incredibly strong. So I just hope that, you know, people there stay safe and, you know, if there is anything we can do, if there is anybody watching, we can even connect somebody or however, you know.
We'll do it here at Detours. Now, we do have some disruptions happening right around the world in travel. So if you're going to Japan, clearly there's been some disruptions. But also if you're travelling to Vanuatu, Peru, Colombia, Solomon Islands, to Ecuador, Panama, to Chile, to Honduras, to Nicaragua, it goes on, to Guam, especially Guam, there, Palau. A lot of flights and airports were closed down last night with the unknown about whether or not there'd be a large wave or tsunami approaching these places, and it'll take a day or two to get it back in, even down to French Polynesia and Tonga and New Caledonia. So if you're,
and we were on that list last night as well, which was rather scary.
So a few delays, and it'll take a day or two for the flights to pick up, but a day or two longer, maybe a month or so for Japan to get the Miyagi Prefecture back in tread. But today, we do have some fabulous guests joining here at Detour Studio. We have two lovely gentlemen. We'll introduce them now. We've got Alistair McKenzie.
Good morning, Greg.
Oh, Alistair McKenzie.
Good morning, Greg. Good morning,
Switch him on, please.
And I'm we on. Have Joy's own Mr. Chocolates, Chris Dawson.
Hello.
Hello, Chris.
Thanks
how
for
are
having
you?
Us.
I'd like to know more about awesome the Mr. Chris. Chocolates.
Yeah, it's going really well. We've nearly sold all the boxes. There are a few left at the front desk. But yeah, good turnout.
Beautiful. So is that a fundraising thing that you're involved with?
To help finish the studio here.
Ah, so it's about fitting out the Joy Studios that we sit in.
Finishing the last tidbits.
So now that I understand why the walls haven't been completed.
In progress.
And why there's, you know, a piece of tarpaulin after the window there. Which makes a lot
bad.
Of sense.
Now, you guys are a much-travelled couple, and we're going to unpack
we are.
Some of your travels today. Is that all right? Do you mind?
Absolutely. I love great. Talking about travel.
Oh, and Alistair, you also, you have an important role here. You've been on the board at Joy 94.9 for a number of years, and you're the treasurer of the organisation.
That's right. So Chris and I link in quite well there because he's doing all the fundraising at the moment around the chocolate space, and I'm counting it as it comes in. And it's initiatives like that are pretty important here at Joy too, because it's an easy one, because, I mean, everyone likes chocolate. I mean, we've raised over $1,000 so far from the drive, and it's a pretty passive drive, so we can just sit the boxes at work or the counter at Joy, and they tend to go.
Oh. Fantastic. Now, you guys are... Let's explore and start with your last travel? Because I know it's only a matter of days since you guys were travelling last.
Well, last August, so.
Oh, no, locally, here in Australia.
Oh,
Where did you recently travel to?
Well, outside of Australia, I went to New Zealand over Christmas, which is not too far away, just before the earthquakes. We went to, I think our favourite destination was Lake Tekapo.
Yeah, it was interesting in New Zealand as well, because I've done a bit of travel with my mother, as it happens. We went to Japan about 18 months ago, and she came along for our Christmas trip to Christchurch with my father and my aunt and uncle. And she's terrified of, obviously, earthquakes. That's a big fear of hers. So I was very proud that she actually stepped out of her comfort zone and experienced those two countries. But when we were in Christchurch, she actually, her hotel room, she ended up getting one of the big hotel rooms in the hotel, and I was very jealous. I walked over there and said, "Oh my God, Mum, this is fantastic." I looked out the window and I could see, you know, some amazing views and landscapes. And then she said, "Look to the right." And there was actually a fallen building to the right of her window, so she was quite
from
terrified.
The first earthquake.
Wow.
It was all very real and very vivid.
Brings it home, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Because you see it on the news, but until you actually get there and actually see the devastation. And that was after the Boxing Day earthquake. That was obviously before the larger one a couple of weeks ago. And already, like, most of the shop fronts in the main street were shut down. And I was there the prior year too, and it was just a bustling little metropolis, Christchurch.
What do you do in an earthquake zone to prepare yourself? Do you actually think about that when you go in, apart from seeing the outside?
I think a lot of locals, like speaking to a lot of my New Zealand friends, that it's something that they're kind of brought up learning a lot about. But in Australia, I think it's something that's quite alien to us. So as tourists, there's not really a lot of information on what to do, because I think the assumption probably is there that most people, you know, have a plan. Which, yeah, we wouldn't have a plan in that instance.
Mine would be simply to flap my hands in the air and scream, ah!
Yet in Japan, they have an amazing plan. As soon as the building started rocking, the earthquake wardens kick into gear, people go to assembly points.
Under the tables and everything.
And they know what to do. And when it subsides, they know where to go, where to meet, what to actually do. And they have sirens that announce there's a tsunami approaching. And most people hit the pathways and head towards the collection areas. But when you travelled New Zealand, did you have any instructions?
No. But, I mean, you even look at Japan. I mean, given the disaster that's just occurred, given the extent of that particular earthquake, I mean, the damage... I mean, Tokyo's still standing. I mean, they're very prepared for the eventuality of earthquakes. So I guess in New Zealand, perhaps that's probably not quite as evident.
But I think when they rebuild New Zealand, though, because in Japan they have the earthquake-proof buildings to some extent, probably not for 8.4 on the Richter scale, but I think in New Zealand they'll have those kind of buildings in the future.
Well, the engineering's known, isn't it? So
yeah, exactly.
Time to put it in place.
And there's apparently a system, I'm not going to go into the technicalities of it because I have no idea, but apparently they can actually use a foundation that will move or something like
it's
that.
It's like an air foundation or something.
That's
air pressure. And something technical.
Something technical, which over my head. But and they were saying it's too expensive, and I'm thinking, you know, in a situation like this where you are prone to earthquakes, surely to God there's some way you can come up to keep the people safe, because this is about lives, you know, not about cost. But, and your trip to New Zealand, you know, going with your mum, because we're having a little bit of a chat about this just for chill out. You've travelled with your mum a few times, or that was the first?
Well, yeah, in my family, we've all travelled internationally. My sister lived in Canada with her family for a couple of years. I lived in Scotland for 2.5 years. Dad used to travel quite extensively with work to the US, Egypt, Europe. Mother, sisters also travelled, but mother had never actually, you know, farm girl from Omeo, she'd never actually been on a plane till probably about 4 years ago. So they've just retired. So I was really keen to kind of get her out of her comfort zone and get her on a plane and experience something a little different. So I actually booked a trip to Tokyo. And mum had no desire whatsoever to go to Japan. She was kind of keen to go to England to visit the Queen.
What a nice son you are.
But she absolutely loved it. Absolutely loved it, because, I mean, that was one thing that, in terms of her circle of friends, a lot of them had travelled, like my aunt, particularly my aunt and uncle, but no one had actually been to Japan. So for her, it was really something that she could kind of bring to the social situations. It was something she was very proud of. And I was really proud of mum, actually. We went on a big trek. She's like 65. She trekked 20 kilometres into the hills outside of Tokyo. So it was a good bonding experience as well to have that adventure with my mother too.
Now, look, you're a young man. Your mum has to be young as well. But I had an image of the doily hat and the gloves waiting on the street corner of Japan for the Queen to drive past, and she's 3,000 miles away.
Yeah, you know, as I said, mum's a farm girl, so she's quite comfortable rolling up the jeans and putting the boots on, so...
Very good. Now, it's coming up soon, we're going to play a little bit of music. What's the track that you want to hear? It's your favourite music.
I wouldn't say it's necessarily my favourite song. It probably was when I first came out quite a few years ago. But when we were actually in Iceland in August of last year, and we can talk a bit about that later, but this was one of the songs that they played at their... The main nightclub
Barbara's.
In Reykjavik called Barbara's.
And it's, Barbara's.
And it's picture of the Queen.
That's
on the
right.
Front
painted hot pink
what's
with sparkles.
The song?
It's you might have heard of it, Greg. It's called the YMCA.
Oh, really? Is that a new track?
You're on Detours here with Chris and Alistair, of course, and Lindsay and Greg. Joy 94.9.
All day,
all day,
all night. Joy 94.9.
Now, that music, YMCA, gentlemen, you're on Detours listening to Al and Chris, our guests, with Lindsay and Greg. That music, have you ever travelled in backpackers?
I've got to say, when that song came on at Barbara's, it was like the universal choreography just started to happen with no matter where you came from. The Canadians, the Aussies, the Icelandics, it all happened.
The Icelandics?
Yeah,
so
I love it.
You have travelled to, is it Reykjavik?
Yeah, we actually did quite a bit of Iceland. We started off in Reykjavik. We also went up to the north near the Arctic Circle to do some kayaking. Chris booked us a trip in central Iceland to do some horse riding. And we went down south and near where the volcano erupted. Oh, and I can't pronounce it, so please don't, ask.
A really long name.
And we snowmobiled down a glacier there.
That was great.
And then we headed into Greenland for a couple of days.
Because when you say the word Iceland, automatically all you see is white, snow, not a lot to do, staying inside, drinking port by an open fire. But it sounds like it's really quite not so much a happening place, but it's an interesting place.
There's a lot of touristy things to do.
Yeah.
There's Gullfoss, big waterfalls. There's the blowholes. There's Blue Lagoon, which is, I think it's the thermal pools. They bring in about 6 million litres of seawater every 40 hours, and it's heated by and through the Earth's surface. And it's a natural source of silicon as well. So they put it all over their bodies and it's supposed to...
Oh, that's why they always look so good over
there. Smooth skin.
And being such a volcanic area, it's a bit like New Zealand in terms of the landscape too. It's very lush. Mm. So there's the old adage, I think it was, Iceland is green, Greenland is ice. And that's exactly how it shapes up in reality.
But is there a summer period there? Because it's always like, you know, the images are always like ice, snow, cold, big boots, big jackets...
Well, the midnight sun. So effectively over summer, and this is when I lived in Scotland, I found this because you'd get up for work and it would still be dark at 9 o'clock. You'd get home, it would be dark at 4 o'clock. Iceland's even more dramatic in that context because effectively the sun doesn't go down. It kind of dulls for a period, like in the early hours of the morning, but it doesn't go down. And then during winter, peak of winter, you might only get 4 or 5 hours of daylight. And that's one of the first questions we asked when we arrived. We went on this little gay boat tour, kind of, you know, the launch of the Gay Pride Festival.
The whale-watching tour.
The whale-watching tour.
No whales.
No whales, but it was
fun to watch.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we asked one of the bar ladies there about, you know, how long is it going to stay light for? And she said, oh, you know, it's getting dark pretty early now. It's about 11 o'clock. And we're like, wow. I said, how do you handle that in summer? And expecting, you know, her to say, oh, well, you know, we've got these really thick blinds or we wear goggles or something. She goes, oh, it's terrible. I never sleep.
They go crazy and they just party lots and lots and drink a lot to cope with it.
Now, you're on Detours. That voice is Chris Dawson with Alistair McKenzie. And if you have any questions and you want to ask these two gentlemen about their travels as we go through their amazing journey, it's 0427JOY949, 0427569949, or you can actually email...
onair@joy.org.au.
You got to love that.
AU.
And I know you guys, Al and Chris, you'd love to have questions from people about places you've been.
Absolutely.
That'd be great.
We called it the tour of the lands because we went to about 6 different lands.
It was like a digger station, a pick of all areas around Europe.
So how did you plan? I mean, that's a huge itinerary and there's a lot of planning. What did you do to pull all that together, Al?
Well, as you'd probably know, Greg, I'm quite... anal when it comes to planning. So,
did you have an Excel spreadsheet?
I actually did.
Along the way, we did, yeah.
An Excel spreadsheet.
It's the accountant in me, so.
I'm so laid back, so I left it all up to him.
Yeah, so we actually did it quite affordably as well. So we used AirAsia, which I've never used before and I was a little bit nervous about. When you're comparing flight prices, and I mean, last time I flew to Europe, it was about $2,000 a few years ago. This time it was $1,200. return. It's all new planes. What we did was we actually booked the itinerary in terms of all the hotels. We pre-booked them because it's a lot cheaper and there's also certainty too. Mm. The last thing you want to do if you're wanting to explore quite a few places is to get stuck without accommodation. But we went into Poland and Slovakia as well, so we kind of took a few days in there too.
Yeah, the cold countries. You like the cold countries.
Yeah. Well, that's because we're Australians. So, I mean, we're used to the sun, we're used to the beach. So it's good to kind of experience something a little bit different.
And I have to, Alistair, if I may, read out your shirt. And it says, "Don't fuck with Iceland. We may not have cash, but we've got ash." And it's it's a brilliant T-shirt. Do you want to explain?
Yeah, it's funny you say that, Liz, because I was actually wearing this on towards the studio today. I was feeling a little bit embarrassed. I was feeling a little bit emo because it's all black. And we saw this T-shirt at most of the tourist shops and stuff. And, you know, I always try and resist the souvenir shops, but I just couldn't resist this T-shirt because... given what's happening at Iceland at the moment, I just thought it was a really cheeky thing to put out there in the public domain. In terms of the volcano, obviously, that was happening as we actually were booking, so we were really nervous as to whether or not we'd actually be able to
cancel
get over
flights,
there.
Yeah.
But what was happening, while the rest of the world was shutting down airlines, the Icelanders were just flying to and fro, unfazed. No, not at all. But the big thing we did notice was that when I lived in Scotland, I looked at going to Iceland because I've been wanting to go there for about 7 years, but it was really, really expensive with the corona. Mm. But since the Australian dollar strengthened, because it's probably double what it was worth when I was in the UK, and then on the flip side, with the crash in Iceland, as terrible as it was, it did result in the currency being devalued. So it actually was probably half the price to travel Iceland than it was a few years ago. Mm. So it was affordable.
Great time to travel.
It's incredibly expensive otherwise.
And the Prime Minister of Iceland is an interesting
Joanna.
Character too. Yeah. Let's
Joanna.
Talk about her.
Yeah, well, she's obviously she just married her partner of many years last year. And that's something we noticed, particularly with the Gay Pride Festival, was that Iceland has a population of about 330,000 people. I thought it would be a lot more. Mm. Reykjavik itself is about 270,000 people, and about 60,000 people attend the Gay Pride Festival. So it's actually the largest public festival in Iceland, gay, straight, whatever. There's a huge support for it, to the extent that when we're walking down the main street, there's all these little children's clothing stores and all the kids are dressed up in rainbow shorts.
Wow.
Rainbow
gay flags hanging out of their arms, yeah.
And do you think that would be because the Prime Minister is gay, is a lesbian, or do you think that has it always been so open over there?
Well, I heard someone say once that people only learn to hate people because their leaders tell them to.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if your leader's actually a lesbian or a gay person and... nothing happens, the sky doesn't fall in, I think it sends a very positive message to the general public.
Be sending a positive message around the world too, actually. Mm. Absolutely.
Now, you spent a couple of years in Scotland, Al. What was that about? How did you pick Scotland? Why did you go and spend... You've got this thing for cold climate, haven't you?
I love the snow. I remember the first time it snowed in Scotland, I was working at TGI Fridays, so... And there was about 5 Australians working there, and it was just before Christmas, and it started snowing. So all the Aussies just ran out into the street just to experience the snow falling on them. And all the Scots were like, what's going on? Don't you can?
Crazy Aussies, yeah.
Yeah, but the reason I went to Scotland was because I'd finished my university, my undergrad, and I thought I'd take some time out before my postgrad. So I actually took a bit more time than I had expected. I went over to London for Millennium. I had a mate over there, so I thought I'd experience, my first big international trip. And I got a visa just in case, and got to the point, I toured a lot of the UK, and then I had 2 days before I had to fly home, and I said to a friend of mine, because I was staying with her in Scotland at the time, I said, if I get a job in the next 2 days, I'll stay, otherwise I've got to go, I've got no money. And I got 2 jobs in the next 2 days, one at Pizza Hut and one at TGI Fridays. And so I ended up staying. It was one of the most amazing experiences of my life. And it really kind of helped me grow up too. I was 25 at the time. And it kind of helped, me put everything in context. So it was good.
Very good. Now, those maths people out there, you can just tell how old he is now.
Damn.
Secret's out.
Now, you guys travel as a couple these days. Where'd you meet? Was it in Australia or was it overseas?
No, it was here in Melbourne.
Yeah, we met through friends.
Ah, we like that. And your first ever travel experience together, even if it was a weekend away in rural country Victoria, can you remember it?
Chill out?
Would have been the beach, Walkerville.
Walkerville.
My sister's 40th birthday.
Oh, yeah.
Scottish now, Highland Fling.
Part of the state, though, Walkerville. It's actually okay, isn't it?
It's still fairly untouched. There aren't many people that reside there. It's really nice to snorkel. We went there a couple of weekends ago to snorkel.
It's actually since, I actually built a house there with a mate of mine a couple of years ago, and just the remoteness of it. The only thing you've got within 20 minutes is a caravan kiosk.
It's hardly ever open.
I've never heard of Walkerville.
But I mean, we found a penguin on the... Bay. We found a...
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, I know where that is.
So we found a fairy penguin on the beach. We've found an echidna on the beach.
Stingray.
An echidna on the beach?
On the beach, digging in the sand. Wombats.
Dead stingray.
Koala. I saw a koala when I was driving down there last time. So I've just never experienced this much wildlife.
And your partner collects dead animals, I can tell. He should be wearing the black emo t-shirt.
Yeah, exactly.
That's fabulous. Now, Linz didn't know where Walkerville is. People out there listening around the world to detours might know how to get to Walkerville from Melbourne.
Walkerville from Paris, even. Yeah.
Good run from Melbourne CBD is only about 2.5 hours. Everyone pretty much knows Phillip Island. So they it's probably about an hour from Phillip Island turn off.
Fantastic. Now you're on Detours listening to Chris and Val and Lindsay. And we'll be right back. 0427 Joy 949 if you want to share the experiences, and on air at joy.org.au. You're on Detours with Lindsay and Greg and our guests, Al McKenzie and Chris Dawson.
Hello.
Hello. Who have this, it's almost like a fetish for things Northern Hemisphere in their travel.
I'm picking up that theme.
We are.
The now, cold.
I suspect that these guys actually have their little eye thingies and their TV stations tuned on cable to Northern news. So they pick up the Northern Hemisphere news and they get the Greenland weather reports. Chris Dawson, do you get the Greenland weather reports?
Well, I checked the weather last night, actually. It's minus 10 overnight.
Bingo.
And they had their first Mardi Gras parade yesterday as well. The turnout was about 1,000 people.
Fantastic.
And the population's only about 59,000.
That's really awesome. Great.
That's awesome. Incredible, isn't it?
They're very forward.
And you just happened to stumble across that?
Yeah, on their main news page.
Did you pick up any of the language? Because I believe the language is very, very different and very difficult to get a grip on.
Well, I didn't understand it at all. They're all Inuits. I'm not sure what kind of language.
There's not. Oh, you're not on? Alistair's not on.
There's not a lot of interaction we found between the tourists in Greenland and the locals. We flew into a little island called Kulusuk, which is just off, it's in between the Icelandic and the Greenland coast. It's
only 200 people population.
Yeah. And we stayed at a place that kind of resembled the Hotel Bates. It was just kind of sitting out by itself, this big blue single-storied building.
Dorm rooms, but it was so expensive.
Yeah, but it was like you could take a little walk into the village. So Chris and I decided to take the scenic route along the waterfront rather than just the main road, which takes about 2 minutes. And I think 2 hours later, we kind of emerged after being chased by huskies and coming across a little glacier. But the landscape in Greenland is like something you never would have seen before. It's like going to the moon. It's absolutely spectacular. I've never seen anything as remote and an alien as
there were icebergs floating down the river outside a hotel room.
Actual icebergs.
Wow.
And then glaciers in the background.
Bigger than cars. Building size, yeah.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
And they choke up the mouth of the bay in winter. It just kind of ices over. It's just phenomenal. Because I have a picture of Chris, actually, in the foreground of this picture, just taking some photos. And it's kind of like all these beautiful wildflowers. And then he's on this rock. And then behind him is the bay with icebergs floating down it. And then behind that are these huge mountains with glaciers coming down into the ocean. So,
but the locals were really nice. They were curious, but it was hard to interact with them with the language barrier.
So how did they explore their curiosity with you?
Well, they just stared and they actually came out of their houses. We were going to town to the supermarket where they sold shotguns, which was kind of interesting. And they just, really curious, staring at you. But there wasn't any interaction.
So we have to ask why they sell shotguns at the supermarket.
Well, they have polar bears in some areas and they're big on hunting. So I think they use that for protection and to get food as well.
Well, you do want to get your...
You don't need a license.
Yeah. That's a pint of milk and a 32 Magnum. Thanks, love.
And we actually got snow. I think we got fogged in on the way out because we stayed for one night. And look, where we went, that was probably enough to experience what we wanted to experience. But we actually got fogged in for about 6 hours at this tiny little airport, and we actually met the deputy president of Greenland, who was there with his wife and just happened to, you know, be popping into Coolasuk and had a bit of a chat to us. And it was amazing all the people we met just waiting for the plane to
There's only one or two flights a day, so if you miss it, then you have to go back to the hotel.
Now, on the subject of flights, being so far away, we can only imagine that it costs an arm and a leg and then some. Is it an expensive trip?
Again, this is where planning comes into it. If you plan well ahead, you can save probably 75% mm-hmm. on flights. So for our little trip into Greenland for 2 days, it costs probably about $1,000 each. But again, that's probably money well spent because it's not somewhere you'd necessarily go back to, but it's definitely something worth seeing.
Once in a lifetime opportunity. That's great.
A few weeks ago, we had Ursula Dawkins, who's a writer, and she did a writer's workshop on a 100-year-old boat roving through the icy waters with painters and philosophers and other writers and poets. Did you enact much or react much to culture in Greenland and Iceland when you were there? Did you see much of the local happening? Any songs?
Well, I went to try and find some souvenirs because I planned to get a souvenir from each location. And I went up to this little hut and they were making little sculptures out of bone. But they hadn't quite finished yet. I kind of walked into the room and they all stared at me. And I was like, oh, okay, hello, goodbye. Because the deputy that we'd met at the airport, we actually met him beforehand near the supermarket. And he said to go up there if you want to get some souvenirs.
It was interesting when we were actually walking around this particular village. I think the idea of Greenland to us was something quite glamorous and unique. But when we actually got into the township, the scenery and landscape aside, it was actually very... it's probably quite reminiscent of a lot of our Indigenous communities. Like we felt a real sense of poverty.
Mm.
But they seemed very happy.
Well, we take things for granted, don't we? In the Western world, we think this is the lot that everyone experiences in the world, and that people wouldn't be happy if they're not in, you know, three-car households with plasma TV.
Puts it into perspective.
Yeah, and people can be in their lot in where they are around the world are often very happy. But some people also, disadvantage would then be in those communities far greater than the disadvantage that we'd experience too.
I always use smiling as a barometer for happiness. And I didn't see a lot of those. So maybe it was a tourist thing.
Yeah. A lot of locals go to the airport because there's nothing else to do really and just see the planes coming in and meeting new people.
But probably somewhere where we didn't get to would have been the northwest coast of Greenland, because that's somewhere we looked at, but that was probably getting a little bit pricey, and also time was a little bit tight for us. But there's an area called Disko Bay, which a lot of Americans and Canadians go to because it's on their side of Greenland, and that's absolutely spectacular from what I hear.
I've heard that they throw amazing dance parties in Iceland and Greenland, you know, both places, that, you know, they start on Friday night and they don't end till it's time to go to work the next day.
On Monday.
And the music too, they're not afraid to sort of play anything really hardcore, you know, like with the modern genres today. Did you venture into any of those dance parties at all?
We did in Reykjavik after the main march. It was a club called Nessa, and there was a big Icelandic DJ there. I can't remember his name. But that went off until the early hours of the morning, and everyone was kind of stumbling around the streets, 9 a.m.
So looking for a recovery.
Yeah, Barbara's.
Barbara's recovery. I mean, that's camp, isn't it? Barbara's. Barbara's in Iceland, wasn't it? Yeah, Barbara's in Iceland. So after that, was there a recovery? Was there anywhere to go, like even a cafe or something?
Probably just...
We went to bed.
Probably just back home.
We had a big few days.
No, don't tell me that.
Now, Terps and Tucker, food and drink in Iceland. What did you eat? What did you drink?
The cuisine... Oh, actually, we tried penguin. Just to try it. Really bad, I know.
You didn't.
Puffin and whale.
Oh,
Politically incorrect eaters.
No, I went the whale, and it was quite controversial. Quite controversial at the dinner table. But my bent on that is that the Icelanders actually eat whale. It's part of their diet, so they don't eat it.
They don't sell it.
They don't sell it for you know, bizarre medicinal purposes or for experimentation. They actually eat it. Yeah. So like we farm cattle, they farm whale.
It was very salty and tasted like meat.
Oh, really?
It's very unique.
It was like steak.
Really?
Like
so it wasn't fatty or...
No, it was
quite nice.
It was,
Oh, no.
Oh, Hannibal.
Oh, no.
Hannibal. Sorry. But yeah, the cuisine
text
in
us now.
The cuisine in Iceland is not that great. They have a lot of fried food.
Well, there's no industry. There's no agricultural industry like there is, say, New Zealand or Australia. So most of the food and produce is imported, even the dairy.
And they and probably fry it in whale oil too.
Yeah, whale oil. And
you're not going to let me off, are you, Greg?
No, penguin. See, whale I can almost go with, but a little penguin.
Well, puffin. You know,
that was puffin.
It was puffin.
Yeah. No.
But that's a penguin.
Penguin
is
was Greenland.
We saw puffins when we were going for our kayak trip around the fords. We saw quite a few puffins.
And can I say, anyone who's wanting to travel with their partner or a friend, go kayaking. It's the most surreal and romantic.
Great
and
bonding experience.
It's a great experience.
Really?
It's just so spectacular.
Very romantic.
It's such an adventure and an achievement. It's quite achievable.
I can see you two in a kayak having a romantic experience.
Bring the candle out.
Ice walls cracking next to you and starting to freak out if that was going to be the first and last trip to Greenland.
Well, at least we're together.
Now, I found a bit of Icelandic music. I thought we might play a little bit of Icelandic music. This is a woman that became a household name in Iceland when she hosted a local variety show. And her name's Hera Bjork. Let's see what she sounds like. Detours with Lindsay and Greg. Oh, and a bit of music to send us off, because that was actually from the Eurovision Song Contest. I found a person from Iceland that actually had performed in the Eurovision Song Contest last year. So that was a bit of music. Je ne sais quoi by that lovely woman.
I love Eurovision.
Do you?
Because it's from the Northern Hemisphere.
Yeah.
There we go again.
There's just something about it, though, that it'll always be really daggy. You know, like it'll just be, you know, but it's so... I like the presenters because they're almost like they're trying to be really American. You know, now, what did you think of that? And they're obviously from some obscure country, you know, putting on these accents, these sort of almost American accents, or I don't know whether, you know, but it's very American. Now, the other thing is you went from Iceland and Greenland to Austria. Have I got that right? That was the next
Austria
part
first.
Of the journey.
Yeah, and we stayed at a 5-star hotel, The Ring. It was kind of marketed as the luxury casual hotel, and then from there we did all the sightseeing to the opera house. And
can I just say that while Chris was staying at this 5-star hotel, I was slumming it in Poland at the time. We actually had a day where we kind of
because the flights didn't
had
quite
a break. And Chris flew into Austria a day earlier than me, and I was stuck in this absolute hellhole in Poland.
Gross.
In Krakow,
like that one of those horror films.
Oh.
But there's just something about Poland, isn't there? Like, I don't know. Yeah. I've never been there, but, you know, coming from a part ethnic family, like, there was a lot of Polish people, Polish friends. And apart from the fact they're as mad as cut snakes, like, they're just mental, and give them a little bit of vodka and away they go. But, you know, the food's really stodgy, you know, because it's so cold and it's, you know, mashed potato sauerkraut and, you know, a bratwurst sausage or something. When you were there, like, what was the main point of interest?
Well, it's interesting what you say there, Linz. I mean, in Australia, obviously, like, and this is just in terms of the reaction to gay people, because we did have a bit of an issue in Poland.
A gay issue.
Oh, tell us about that.
A gay issue. We had a couple of gay issues on our trip, actually. The first one was when we booked in our hotel in Krakow. I work with this lovely Polish woman called Elizabeth Urbanski. So if she's listening, hi Liz. And I actually got her to email Poland in Polish and book our hotel and ask for a very romantic room. It was our anniversary and all this. So when we arrived, we got put in a really nice room with a great view in twin beds. And I'd booked a king.
It's about 2 in the morning. So
2 in the morning. Just got off the plane. It was delayed. We were exhausted. Mm. So I said to the guy, I went downstairs. I said, oh, I think there's been a mistake. I said, we actually booked a king room. And so he then said, oh, okay. and gave us another room, which was about half the size at the back of the hotel, and stained sheets. And
you don't know what was on those sheets.
Yeah,
it was gross.
Oh, no, please.
So it all started.
Won't
so
tell you.
Eventually, we ended up settling for the twin room that we were allocated. So, because it was only for one night that we were going to be there together. But it was just interesting how the assumption was there that we were actually not partners, because we were two men. And another interesting thing happened in Iceland as well when we were walking down the street, because I think I said to Chris when we arrived, I was like, this is like the island of Lesbos. I said, I feel like this is what it would be like to be straight in Australia, because it was loads of gay people there, because it was the festival and the rainbow flags everywhere. So we were walking around holding hands, totally comfortable. It was wonderful. And then later on that night, there was these two guys walking down the street, and they go, "You homos." So I turned around, "Excuse me?" He goes, "You homos, homosexuals." I said, "Hello, I'm Alistair. I'm from Melbourne. How are you?" And he just stared at me, and then we just said, "Okay, have a good night," and walked off. But that was probably the first time we kind of...
We thought they were locals initially, but we think they may have been tourists.
Yeah, we saw them carrying backpacks the next day, so...
and I think it's really polite to be, like, "Are you homos?" rather than, some of the other things that you can be called, I think that's...
They're a lot worse.
Maybe it was a technical question, Liz.
Maybe he was looking for...
Homosex. You have sex at home or not?
He was hoping that you had twin beds and could share one with him.
Yeah, he might have been trying to pick you up. Yeah.
Possibly.
Yeah, but actually that brings me to the people, because when we, see people from these countries, they're always blonde and beautiful and, hang out in spas. No, Alistair's sort of no. Are they blonde and beautiful or?
Eclectic.
Eclectic, okay.
Ah, rugged.
I think the Polish are absolutely stunning.
Mm. But the girls are really, really hot. And tall, slender.
Not as hot as you, though, Chris.
Model material. Oh, thanks.
Said the right things. Yeah. I can hear another holiday coming on. We're almost towards the end of Detours, but we'll be back shortly. We want to talk about a bit more with these guys before they go.
Great.
If you have any questions you want to ask, 0427-JOY949 or on air at joy.org.au. This is Lindsay and Greg on Detours.
Joy 94.9.
And
the GPS for the GBLTIQ community.
It is, and we are the GPS for the travel community here in Australia.
GPS.
Melbourne, Australia and the world. This is Detours with Lindsay and Greg. Jodie's off on assignment this weekend, but she will be back next week. And Macca is having a little bit of rest. Macca is actually relaxing somewhere on a lounge chair in his backyard.
Oh. I can see him with some cucumbers on his eyes.
Eyes, yeah.
Avocado
yeah,
face
yeah.
mask.
Yogurt and his, it's a face mask.
In the northern climate, and I want to ask that too, in the northern climate, with all the ice and cold, it must be really dry. How do you, as gay men or as individuals, protect your skin while you're travelling through areas with really high sunshine and dry, cold air?
Apart from whale fat, that is.
Because you both have beautiful skin and beautiful faces. How do you protect that?
Just moisturising, of course.
Moisturising.
It's my daily routine.
But how do you get your moisturiser on the plane?
Well, if you put it in your main luggage, that's fine. Were they strict in Iceland?
No.
They're pretty laid back.
Europe's like flying around Australia. It's pretty much just free slather now.
Mm.
So the problem we have is when we travel anywhere, we have to actually cross the great oceans to get to anywhere of Europe or American significance.
But it was a bit annoying having to put everything in a plastic bag, because we went on a lot of planes. I think about 14, 13 flights altogether in less
That's
than 3
fantastic.
Weeks.
Yeah.
It was a feat.
I love the journey rather than the destination. I'm a travel buff. I love sitting on a plane and I love airline food.
I thought I did too, but after the end of it. Mm.
Now, going between Austria and between Iceland, what did you get served up as food on the jets?
Sardines.
They usually have local peculiarities, don't they?
A lot of sandwiches. It wasn't amazing.
The food was nothing to write home about.
No?
On the planes, no, the airline food. Because we generally use budget airlines.
The Austrian airline was good. They gave you free alcohol and that short flight. Who did we fly with?
That was Airlot.
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 Oh, it was Polish airline. Yeah, that was
like,
pretty cool.
The stewardesses were like models and all kind of dolled up. And,
they were hot.
Big meal. That was good. It was only an hour flight.
Because the funny thing is, like, my impression of Polish women is, because they're all older, with their babushkas on their head and, wearing old men's cardigans and skivvies and tweed skirts. And you're telling me that the women in Poland are really hot. I've missed out somewhere.
Linz, you've got to get over there.
Oh, okay.
You would cause damage in Poland.
I oh, really? I could be the roving reporter. But it doesn't, it's the fact that these countries are so bloody cold, because I don't like the cold. I actually suffer in the cold. And everyone we have on takes these wonderful pictures of these colder climates. And I see they're going, I'd really like to do that, but it's just
Maybe
freezing.
Greenland and Iceland's not for you then.
No, well, no, then, but I'd love to do it. Or
you could travel in summer.
I could actually. But does Poland have a summer?
It wasn't too, it was actually lovely.
It was really warm, warm in Poland.
High 20s.
Wow.
Now, we've had one message come in. They've asked, how do you stay fit while you're travelling? Because you seem to do most exotic travels. How do you stay fit?
We're doing a lot of walking around, but we had a couple of gyms, one at the Hyatt in the Churchill in London, and also in Austria. But we had the idea of going, but we didn't actually quite get there.
We also run. So in more of the remote areas, it's actually nice to go for. I went for a run in Greenland.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Oh, wow.
And it's a good way to see it. And the kayak trip was sensational.
8 hours of paddling.
Horse riding for about three days. I was like John Wayne.
The Viking horses were great.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they were gorgeous. They've actually got an extra gate.
Five gates.
Horses in Australia, they walk, trot, canter and gallop. Yeah. In Iceland, there's a gate that's in between trot and canter. So I didn't know that until after we'd actually ridden the horses. And I come from a farm, so I've ridden horses, and I wasn't really quite sure what the horses were doing at one point. They were going really quick, but they were like trotting really quickly.
Yeah, that was fun.
Very dainty.
And did you take much photography or film?
Oh, about 600 shots altogether. Alistair took more than me. He was the photographer.
I've got a really cute picture of Chris hoofing, picking the horse's hoof, getting all the gunk out after our ride, which is on my desk at work, actually.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
And it's pretty awesome. This has been a really good visit with you guys here. Where are the next places you're going to go? How far is Alistair's travelling spreadsheet in planning for this?
Well, before our last trip in August last year, we were planning on going to Egypt, which I'm glad we're not there now, and also a safari tour.
Beautiful.
In Africa. So I think we'll still do that. It's in the pipeline.
Definitely Africa for me. Safari or Cape Town and probably the Amalfi Coast in Italy.
And the fashion for the safari will be very nice. I believe it's a safari suit and a pith helmet.
You must go to the Amalfi Coast. We've got to have you back after you do that part of Italy.
That would be great.
Yeah. I mean, people swear by the food, Turf's Tucker, the colours and the lights and the colours and the scenery. So I think you've whet my appetite for travel. And it's been fabulous having you both here.
Thanks for having us.
So the rest of the weekend, what's planned?
Down to chill out.
Ah.
Till Monday. Bush dance tonight, I think it is. Yeah.
There's our plane. Means we're heading off.
We're off.
We're going.
It's been Detours with Al.
Thank you, Greg.
With Chris.
Thank you, Lynn.
Thank you.
Have a good weekend, Liz.
Have a fabulous weekend. I'll bump into you at Chillette tomorrow, hoping.
We will.
Gorgeous.
See you tomorrow.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.